hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me tonight is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Deason. How's it going, Kevin?
Hello, Chris. Hello, everyone. It's finally getting cold. See if this podcast can keep you warm. Now, Chris, do you have a little challenge in your house as well to see how late in the year you can go before you turn on the heat?
No, because our furnace has been going off since August.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. where I live, it gets, I don't know, this summer sucked. Like, where I lived, it was really cold all summer. Like I said, like, August, our furnace was going off. Actually, I think it might have even been before that. It might have been in July, even.
Oh, wow.
Like, not full time, but it was we had to get someone to actually come light it, because I wasn't home at the time, and my wife was home by herself, so, yeah, and I think that was in July, and that's sad. That saddens me that our summer was so cold. And where I am right now, in Barrhead, Alberta, we have snow on the ground, and there's forecasting for more snow this weekend, so I'm not looking forward to that at all.
We got, not where I am, sorry, not where I am yet, mm-hmm. but pretty much halfway between myself and Rich, we'll say.
Okay.
Has snow.
Yeah.
So it's coming. It's just that way that jet stream comes down from you into where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the other morning, like driving home from work, the roads weren't the greatest, and outside the town of where I live, like, the highway was, like, literally like a skating rink. Like, it was not good. But, yeah, it is that time of year again, unfortunately. But, yeah, no, I wish we lived someplace where we didn't have to turn our furnace on until November. That would be awesome. But as a general rule in Alberta, we usually, our furnaces are going September, October. But this year it was a little bit earlier because, like I said, it was a cold summer. It really was. Like, I know the one ball tournament I played in August, it was the middle of August, and that Sunday it was plus 4 degrees outside. Celsius. So Fahrenheit, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know Fahrenheit and Celsius, when it gets to zero, it's pretty much the same. So, yeah, you can imagine. But, however, rather than dwell on the things we can't change, let's talk about, well, things we can't change, but things that we want to rewatch. And for this episode, I'm calling it Pop Culture Rewind, because I've tasked Kevin and myself with coming up with at least two things from pop culture that we intend to revisit, rather than, you know, something we haven't visited already, something perhaps we visited a long time ago and we want to get back to, or something we were told about but never got around to it and we're getting to it now, that sort of thing. So, Kevin, we'll start with you. What's something from pop culture that you want to revisit or are revisiting?
See, and the funny thing is the listeners don't know the messages that you and I have had over the last several months, mm-hmm. over my first topic.
Oh, okay.
So a while ago on one of these episodes, Chris and I were talking comics, mm-hmm. as we are known to do, and he brought up the Mark Waid written Irredeemable. And it's pretty much what happens if Superman went bad. Mm-hmm. This is the pitch that, sorry, this is the pitch from Boom Studios, Mark Waid himself, from Chris as well. And I remember hearing about it, and, I mean, Wizard was dead by then, but, you know, mm-hmm. Probably like CBR or Newsarama or one of them. And I was at my local library, and they had volumes 1 through 6.
Okay.
I think 1 through 6 right now. So I grabbed one, read it that day, went back the next day. I said, I can't believe this. You and everyone else greatly shortchanged what this is.
It is awesome. Yep.
Yeah, and it's driving me nuts right now because none of the libraries in the local system have volume 7 and 8.
Oh.
So I'm going a little nuts wanting to finish it. I might go Comixology soon. I'm waiting to hear back if I can get it from outside the system. Or the nearest Barnes & Noble is a bit of a trek, but I'd be willing to. But it's not just what if Superman went bad, because that's kind of like what that whole Injustice series from DC is doing right now, in a way.
Yeah, and Irredeemable predates that. Like, cause,
oh, yeah, by many years.
Like, I know one of the things I read about it was Mark Waid actually pitched this to DC. He wanted this to be an Elseworlds story where Superman goes bad. And DC said, no effing way. Are we going to do something like that? Where, you know, that would tarnish our brand. That would tarnish Superman. That would tarnish, you know, DC Comics. Like, we can't tell that story. So that's why he went to Boom Studios, and they're like, well, you know, we would definitely do something. Like, obviously, we can't call him Superman. We're going to have to come up with different names. But, yeah, no, DC was, like, totally against it. But now, I think, given the success of Irredeemable, that was when they were like, maybe we can do this. And then they did the Injustice thing.
Well, also, Injustice is under their current editor-in-chief, who absolutely seems to be wanting to create this legacy of, this is what I created. Mm-hmm. Which rumor is why he killed off, like, Mad and Vertigo this week, mm-hmm. officially.
Yeah.
And certain other things that he's done, bringing Bendis over to DC, giving him kind of free reign. Yeah. He wants all of this to be his legacy as an editor. Which, as much as people might say, well, what's it matter? You're an editor. Just look at Marvel. This was created under Jim Shooter. This was created under Joe Quesada. And they're big things that you can put under those.
Yeah.
So I can see why, you know, this current DC editor wants to create that. I don't know if it's going to work. Time will always tell for things like that. So I could see not just the success of Irredeemable, but him wanting to say, oh, the previous group said no to this. I'm going to say yes to it. And, I mean, it's Injustice. It's the video game. It's similar but different.
Yeah.
But Irredeemable, it's... You know, we've said for the Marvel movies before how they have one of the secrets to having such great villains is you're with them to a point. You can agree with them to a point.
Mm-hmm.
But you've taken that journey. That storytelling idea goes back to Paradise Lost. I can see where you're going up to a point, and then it's like, oh wait, you've gone too far. You are evil. I fell for it, but now I need to go away. And you need to be defeated. Irredeemable doesn't start that way. He straight up has turned when the story starts. But there's layers upon layers that are revealed as you read it and go, I understand how this happened.
Mm-hmm.
I understand how he finally snapped. And the even if you take away the evil nature of it, which, I mean, I don't want to spoil, but it's like, pick something. There's so much horrible acts. And then the secrets that come out from all of them. There's, like, just pick something. But the way he takes, this is how Superman's day would be. This is how his life would be. This is what it would take for him to have 5 minutes of quiet. And then when he comes back, he realizes all the pain and suffering that happened in just 5 minutes that he could have stopped. Mm-hmm. But he just wanted 5 minutes to be alone with his... with no sound. You can't blame someone. That's so many of us that, you know, you're done with work for the day and you just want to sit in your car for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to deal with anyone or anything for just a couple minutes. Maybe I'll play a song. Maybe I'll just be alone with my thoughts. Maybe I'll just learn to breathe again. So to be a god, of course you would want that too.
Yep.
But you can't have it. It was just, I couldn't believe how much empathy I had to one of the most horrific villains I've ever read, too. It was just amazing. And, I mean, so much of that's just Mark Waid. The guy's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I I can't think of anything bad he's written. But this has just been... I'm going nuts not having the last two volumes of it. I want to know how he finishes it and wraps it up. And there was volume 5, maybe? There's a... It's not part of the official run of, like, one through however many issues. It's like a side issue. And it has a little thing of, these are the three people that will save the world. One isn't there yet. One doesn't believe in herself, and one's already dead, or something like that. I can't remember how they worded it.
Oh, okay.
And because Hornet was a part of it. But it was like a flashback to how he discovered things on his own, which Hornet's the Batman analogy, but mm-hmm. not to. The secrets for God, I don't want to spoil it, but so many secrets. You have your... You know what really got me? The one that really got me is the demon alien thing that has to be summoned into our reality, our dimension, whatever, by coming through someone's body.
Mm-hmm.
And they know he is the only one that could stop the plutonium, the irredeemable one, because when he was a straight-up alien... other dimension demon villain, and Plutonian was a good guy, he almost defeated them. So, oh, hey, we're so desperate to stop the Superman gone bad. We will go to all of his deadliest villains and hope they'll help us.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, it's just been so incredible. Such a great run. Like, I'm thrilled you told me about it, because, I mean, it's comic. We all like to think that eventually we'll get around to this stuff, but... Mm-hmm. There's so much to read and watch and everything out there. But
oh, yeah. I'm
so happy about it. I was reading... What was the reveal? There's some... I can't remember which one. There's so many. There's like a major reveal every page. Oh, I know what it was. Gee, I really don't want to spoil for listeners because it's incredible. But there was one that I was reading and I stopped... And I went to my wife and I held up the book. I said, you have no idea how amazing this is. You have no idea. I am floored by what I just read. I just sat here and stared at it. When I turned the page and had another reveal, I just stared at it. I said, I don't know what to do. I want to keep reading, but I also want to stop and just enjoy this massive reveal. And I can tell you later what it was, but I really don't want to spoil because I want everyone to go into it the way I went into it.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, it's been a few years since I've read it. Like, I want to say the series ended, I want to say 2013 or maybe even 2012. I can't remember. So it's been a few years since I read it. Like, I started reading it in trades and then I caught up to the issues. So then I just started reading it monthly at that point. And then, have you read any of Incorruptible?
No, because the way I meant to ask you to, and I forgot, a couple volumes are at my local library,
mm-hmm.
but the way you described it, I thought it came after.
No, it did come after. Like
I didn't want to risk having the ending of Irredeemable spoiled to me by going into Incorruptible.
I don't think you will. So, obviously, you haven't got to the point where they do a crossover then.
No, nope.
Okay, because that will happen. Because they actually do crossover. No, it started, I want to say, like a year after Irredeemable came out. And the premise is basically a villain decides to become a good guy. He's a... I can't even remember his name. This superpowered villain, like his superpower is that he's kind of like Luke Cage. Like he has that kind of strength. Like he's bulletproof. He's like you can't stop him, right? Like and he's strong and all that kind of stuff. But his powers reset themselves when he falls asleep. So, like, if he goes to sleep and he wakes up, he's just a normal dude. And it takes, like, hours and hours and hours before his his invulnerability comes back. So if he's, you know, in the middle of a fight or whatever, like if he gets knocked out, he's done, right? Like with the Plutonian, there was this one arc, if I remember correctly, where he had to, like, state, like, he was kind of fighting the Plutonian, or he was trying to stop him from doing something, but he had been up for, like, 30 hours or something. So, like, he gets tired like everyone else. Like, I mean, and the longer he stays up, you know, just like everyone else, the more impaired his mind gets because he's tired. But he can't go to sleep because then he'll be vulnerable. So, and yeah, prior, because I think his origin story, if I remember correctly, is he witnesses the Plutonian do a horrific act. Like, he kills people. And basically, this guy just hides. Even though he possibly, you know, because of his super strength and some, or whatever, like, he might have stood a chance against the Plutonian. But he was just so scared that he hid while the Plutonian killed a bunch of people. And then that's when he kind of decides, like, I gotta change my ways. I gotta become a better person. And, like, his sidekick, he has, like, a Robin-esque female sidekick called Jailbait.
Okay, he's shown up, but he hasn't been... They haven't shown anything for him.
Okay.
It was that same side story book that was collected in one of the volumes.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows Hornet discovering everything about plutonium and then rushing home. When Hornet went to the aliens and, like, sold out Earth, or protected Earth by selling out other planets.
Yep.
It's that side story. And then they have another side story, and I didn't know what was going on or what the point was, but... Yeah, the character Jailbait gets in the car with someone, and it doesn't really make it clear who he is or what his deal is. It just implies this is going to matter later.
Okay, yeah.
So the two of them have shown up, but it's been just that little thing and nothing further yet.
Oh, okay. I can't remember what his name is. Like I said, it's been years since I've read any of that, but I would say it's not as good as Irredeemable, but it's all right. Like for example, like the character Jailbait, the reason why she's called Jailbait is because she's underage. And this guy actually, you know, took advantage of that, right? Like when he was a villain. So then when he becomes a good guy, he basically cuts off the relationship with her, right? We can't do anything, blah blah blah. And then there's another Jailbait that shows up, another character. But yeah, anyway, yeah, it's good. It's definitely worth checking out for sure.
And you have that, big older male super villain in this case, but super being, and young teenage sidekick, accomplice, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's been spun at its head. I mean, you could go back to Adam West Batman when they added Aunt Harriet. We have to have a woman on the show. Yes, but it's his aunt, so I don't see what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And then I bought it years ago, but I remember reading about it when I was way too young and first into comics. But Kitchen Sink Press's Brat Pack is a mess with all that. It's good. It was interesting. It's total, like, a black and white underground comic, mid-80s. And it shows in a lot of ways, but it's real good at exploring the... It did the whole, you know, our superheroes perversions take, but went further because they could.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a... You can find it pretty easily if you're looking for, like, a messed up take, but a good read, too. Brat Pack would end up being real worth it.
Brat Pack. Okay, I will write that down.
Yeah, Rick Veitch or something like that, I think was his name.
Okay, awesome.
But if you remember Comic Scene magazine, I would buy off the newsstand because, you know, this was like, you know, the Batman, Michael Keaton movies and, you know, all sorts of covers like that at the time that were attracting me. But then they would always have an adult independent publisher review section.
Okay.
So I'm reading this, you know, before I was teenage age, just to read about, you know, Batman and Spider-Man and all. And then here's this messed up comic they're talking about, but I remembered it. So when I was, you know, older and had more disposable income, I tracked it down.
Awesome. Yeah, it is nice having that disposable income when you get a little bit older, to be able to get those things that you couldn't get when you were younger.
Yeah, now I just need a place for them.
Yeah, that's my problem. I'm literally running out of room. Just the other day, I unearthed my original comic book collection from when I was a kid. So I had a fun time thumbing through that. That was a lot of fun. But, all right, well, I'll move on to my first pick, and that is Sherlock. The reason why I'm bringing this up is back in September when I went to the Edmonton Comic and Entertainment Expo, I didn't realize this, but there's a group in Edmonton, which is the city closest to me, and they're called the Wisteria Lodgers, and they are Sherlock Holmes Society. Apparently there's groups, you know, in every major city where there's fans of Sherlock Holmes. And anyway, I had a good chat with them and got my picture taken with a Benedict Cumberbatch standee and a Martin Freeman standee. I'm a huge fan of the BBC series Sherlock. Like, I've watched every episode. It's been a few years because it's been at least 2 years since they had a season. Maybe even 3 years at this point. And, yeah, like I'm a fan of Sherlock Holmes, and I've only read a few of the stories. So I've since went out and bought basically you can buy all the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes stories in a complete collection. Like, I actually have a hardcover version of it, that I bought a few years ago, but it's literally like a brick. Like, I'm holding it in my hand right now, and I could literally use this as a weapon if I wanted to.
One of those perennial Barnes & Noble hardcover collections in the States.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, you could hurt someone with it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So it's, like, it's not like, a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of my reading, but I do some reading at work, right, on my coffee breaks and stuff. So it's not practical to take that thing with me to work. So I went to my local bookstore and picked up some paperback versions. They actually have the complete works in two different paperback volumes. One is really thick. It's basically the same thickness. If you've ever seen Stephen King's The Stand in paperback, it's about that thick, volume one. Volume two is a little bit more manageable. It's more like a Star Trek paperback. So yeah, my intention is to get back, reread some of these stories that I've read, and basically read the whole library of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock. And then I also intend to go back and rewatch the BBC series. Like, I believe there's four seasons with three episodes per season, plus they did that that special where it was like an episode, but they actually did it in the old Victorian style, like had them take, you know, do the story in the 1800s. And it's all on Netflix. So it's like, before I used to buy it from Apple because they release these episodes on the BBC in the UK and then PBS in the States. But we get PBS up here, but I think at the time I was away at work, so I had to like buy them from iTunes in order to watch them in a timely manner. But now they're all on Netflix anyway, so I'm going to be getting back to Sherlock and rewatching the series, and I might even go meet some of the people at that society once I get a little bit learned in the ways of Sherlock Holmes, because actually talking with them, they're a very nice group of people, you know, very reminiscent of a Star Trek fan club that I'm a member of, and it's cool just to know that there's people like, you know, that appreciate Sherlock, you know, not too far from me. So, yeah, that is...
So,
oh, go ahead.
Like, just out of curiosity, what would the group do? Do they just meet and watch episodes, discuss? Do they... It seems like a group that would, like, go to escape rooms, maybe?
Yeah, that would actually be pretty cool. Actually, I'm not even sure what they're all about. Like, I know they have a monthly meeting, which I'm assuming they, you know, they must do, you know, a reading, and maybe they do watch an episode of Sherlock. Or maybe, like, I know in the Sherlock Holmes community, the, there was a Sherlock Holmes TV series. Kind of in the, like, in, I know in our last episode, Rich talked about Murdoch Mysteries. Yep. Which is a show made in Canada that's quite popular. But there was a Sherlock Holmes series made in that same sort of style, like, I want to say, like, from 84 to 92. I can't remember the name of the actor, but it's often considered, like, the definitive Sherlock Holmes TV show. So maybe they watch episodes of that. I know I want to get to watching it, but I cannot find any of those episodes on any streaming service in Canada. I know Amazon Prime has some Sherlock Holmes movies and stuff that I'd never heard of before. So I'm going to check those out, but
you know, if that's what it is, like a way for fans to get together to be exposed to things that they don't have another way of. When I feel like you and I talked about this, I mean, it would have been years ago, yep. You know, previous version podcast. But when I was young, like teenage age, the local library tried to do a Star Trek club, and it ran for a couple of years and fizzled out.
Okay.
But I went down as someone that would just occasionally watch Next Generation in syndication, you know, when it came up. I wasn't a huge fan. I enjoyed it. I respected it. I appreciated it. But I didn't know a lot, so I went down for it anyways. And this being pre-internet being the internet, a big part of it was everyone brought their stuff. And so everyone had something that no one else had seen before. Or people only heard about, but they hadn't watched it.
Yep.
And I mean, this is when, like, The Cage was not officially released and was like a tape trading thing. There was the original pilot, right?
Yep.
With Pike. Okay.
I'm actually looking at the VHS right now. I remember getting that as a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, someone brought in their bootleg tape of it, and everyone watched it in the first meeting. But it was absolutely not official.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is now. It's easy to get now, but at the time it wasn't. And then people had like fanzines. And someone had, like, oh, this was only released in, you know, England or whatever it might be. Like, everyone had stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just super interesting to see that. And, you know, I've always thought that for, you know, I have certain friends that are into wrestling or comics or whatever, you know, subgenre interests. We all have stuff that we're the only ones that have that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the Sherlock ones, like, you might go to one of these meetings and someone has that whole series.
That is true. Well, I know, like, Star Trek fan clubs and so on and so forth. I know, like, these, the people that were in this group at this table, they were all dressed up. Like, they, you know, like, they were dressed up as Victorian-era Sherlock Holmes, and it was awesome. Like, it was great cosplay. So there might be some of that as well.
Yeah. Now, I wonder what the divide is for the books, to have one book that's huge and one that's for the Sherlock Holmes stories and one that's so much smaller. There must be a reason these are collected in volume one and these in volume two. Publishing dates, international rights. I certainly don't know why, but there's got to be some reason to not divide it evenly.
Well, I think it was publishing. Like, I think like volume one is so much bigger because I think it has like the four main novels. Because a lot of Sherlock is actually like short stories that he wrote in a I can't remember the name of the magazine at the time, but it was collected, right? But he actually wrote actual like four novels that are also included into this, and then all the short stories afterwards. And I'm thinking Volume 1 probably ends with the death of Sherlock, like, because Sherlock Holmes and Professor Moriarty end up going off, what do they call that, Rhinebeck Falls, I want to say it's called?
Yep.
When they go off and essentially Sir Arthur Conan Doyle killed him off, like, he was done. But, you know, a la Kevin Smith, you know, like when Kevin Smith said, you know, I'm not doing View Askew movies anymore, you know, Clerks, you know, 2, that's the last time we're going to see them, you know, that's the last time we're going to, you know, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, that's the last time we're going to see Jay and Silent Bob in a movie. But then he always ends up coming back, right? Because that's the bread and butter, that's what's paying the bills. I think Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, like, you know, because there was a lot of backlash when he killed them off, right? And then he got paid a lot of money to bring them back, and that's what he did. So I'm thinking Volume 2 is when Sherlock Holmes comes back and his, you know, adventures post, you know, his supposed death. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it anyway. But
no, this sounds interesting. I haven't done the Cumberbatch series in forever. I don't think I watched the last season, or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Oh man, you gotta. I'm looking for. It's been long enough that I know there's things I've forgotten, so I'm very looking forward to rewatching it. And there is rumblings that they are doing another season. Because I know, like, the last season, which I want to say ended in 2016-ish. They kind of left it in the air. Like, that could be the last episode, but it could also move on. Like, it didn't end with any sort of cliffhanger, right? So, and I know, like, both those actors are very busy, but apparently they are in talks to do another season, so. But anyway, Kevin, the second item on your list, sir.
All right, so I apologize if this is not international. I've not been able to find out.
Okay.
There is a app that I have on my Roku. You can put in your Roku, your Apple, you know, whatever your means is, called Tubi, or Tubi. Tubi.
Okay, yep. I've seen that, yep.
Yep, Tubi.
Yep.
Story is last year, or, you know, 2019, they had $15 million for their budget to get movies, shows, you know, their equipment, whatever they got. You know, I'm assuming they have some main hub, you know, office.
Mm-hmm.
For 2020, they want 3 times that. I am finding so much stuff on there that is free. There's just some ads. Hmm. Gotta watch a commercial once in a while. But cartoons, sci-fi, horror, and tons of movies, tons of things you've forgotten, and it's all on there free. I found the short-lived Wildcats cartoon from the Jim Lee Image series.
Oh, cool.
Like a 12-episode cartoon.
Yeah.
Whole thing's on there.
Huh.
So I'm going through, and Tales from the Crypt Keeper cartoon was on there. I think Robotech was on there. Like, all sorts of stuff. Tons of anime. A movie that I was exposed to that I'll get into in a moment. That my uncle told me about, we watched. Wasn't on DVD. He had maybe not legal copy of it, we'll say. But I found that on there. Every day I just go through, and it's, you get into the thing of, okay, I got time at night, I can watch a half hour show. You sit down, you know, you might have a drink with you, and you start going through. I'll take that half hour and just explore everything that's on there. I haven't actually watched anything, but there's just so much retro fun content on there. I'm enjoying going through the menus and, like, picking what I'll watch next. But for real, anyone that has anything that you can put something on, grab this. Just grab it, and without a doubt, you'll find something amazing. Now, right, take on that into. I cannot say enough good things about this movie, and it's on there. It's one I just found out about. And Chris, I'll jump ahead. If you know what I'm talking about, I think the best thing is to not tell people too many details.
Okay.
And if you don't know about it, I'll give you as many details as I can.
Okay.
But the movie's called The Man from Earth.
Hmm. Okay. You might have to give me some details.
Okay. So this my uncle played it for me a couple weeks ago. I was in his neck of the woods, and I crashed at his house for the night. He said, you have to see this movie. A man who is a college professor ups and leaves. He's been there 10 years. He's going to leave. He's packing all of his things in a little like cabin house thing. The other professors, who he's grown to be friends with during his time there, drop everything, all show up at his house and say, what's going on? Did you get a job somewhere else? Are you in trouble? I will help you. What do you need? And he says, it's time for me to move on. I can't stay in any place too long. I have to go. And they're pushing him. We're all friends here. We're all friends. We can support you. We can get you out of any problem. We can do this. We can do that. So he slowly starts to reveal why he has to leave. And every other person in the room debates it, confirms it, goes against it, throws out theories based on their expertise in the areas of study that they have their doctorates in. So the biology teacher is there and says, oh, your reasons, your problem, I'm going to ask you questions based on biology and get your answers and come up with my own theory and hypothesis. And there's a history teacher, and there's a theology teacher, and on, psychology. Everyone's coming from it from their different angles. And the main guy who is leaving comes back at every one of them. Hey, what about this? And he'll say, yes, but what about this? And it's this incredible overall philosophical debate in one room that you just get more and more into. And you're not sure what side you're on, what angle is happening, what you think as it's going along, but you're opening up your mind to it. Fascinating. And then the ending I was just floored by. And I'm sitting there watching it. I'm thinking, I would watch this as a play. It all takes place in one room. It's just so brilliantly written and acted. I was just amazed every step of the way. And then I found out the screenwriter got bored a couple years later and converted it into a play. So there's actually some YouTube videos up of the whole performance on stage as well.
And what's this called again?
The Man from Earth.
The Man from... And this is on Tubi.
It's on Tubi. And seriously, you, from everything I know of you, for all of our talks and everything, I have not a doubt in my mind you would love it.
All right.
You just go, oh my gosh, I can't believe they went there. I can't believe this. I have to watch it again.
Awesome. I will definitely check that out. I think I might have Tubi on my Amazon Fire Stick. But if not, I definitely can download it on my phone. I just went and checked my iTunes, or sorry, App Store or whatever, and yeah, it's there, so.
The movie just absolutely floored me. Anyone listening to this, I really don't want to tell you too much, because that's how I went into it. My uncle's just like, hey, I'm pretty sure you'd have an open mind for stuff. And I do.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, other generation, sometimes we don't see eye to eye on stuff, but he at least can respect my opinion of things, which is huge for anyone in this day. He said, I don't think you'll be offended. I think you'll have an open mind, and I really think you'll enjoy this. I went home, and I seen my wife. I'm like, you have to sit down. And she said, when do we have time to sit down and watch an hour and a half movie, both of us? I'm like, okay, I agree. unless the kid goes to bed really early, we don't have an hour and a half. I said, but you have to watch this. And I've been telling so many people after, because the way that you and I both are, we constantly have people ask us, well, what's good? I'm looking for something to watch. I'm looking for something to read. I am constantly telling people about this now. It was just, you brought up Kevin Smith a little bit ago, and I'm not, it's not like that, but it's similar. And for me, and probably for you, when we first saw Clerks, it was like, oh my God, someone's talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is talking to me, but they are talking at a higher level than I am, but still talking to me as an equal. But the way he's thinking, the way he's writing, the concepts that are coming out of his head, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
But I feel like a peer, and I feel like he's getting me there. And then not so much Mallrats, but like Chasing Amy, Dogma for sure does it. Like, oh, I didn't think that way beforehand, but you as a peer are holding my hand, taking me there.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Excellent.
And I'm saying this for us in our 40s, you know? Like,
yeah.
I seriously, like, let me know. Send, you know, I'll pull the curtain back. Send me a message after you see this.
Okay.
Let me know.
Okay, I will do that. I've written it down, and yeah, I definitely will check that out. All right. Well, the second one on my list, and this is also a movie, but it's also a TV show, and it's also a comic book. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because there's a new TV series called Watchmen, and it's on HBO. And to be honest, like back, okay, let's go back in time a little bit. Back in 2009, because like I'm a comic book fan, but I haven't read absolutely everything, right? Like I've read a lot, but I haven't read everything, and I've honestly never read Watchmen, the graphic novel. It's, you know, shame on me. I own it. I remember buying it prior to the 2009 film because I had every intention of reading it before going to watch the movie, but I never did.
That was 2009?
Yep, it was 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So I just went and watched the movie, and I loved it. I mean, I find the Watch movie is very divisive. For me, I really loved it. It is honestly on my top 10 comic book movies, on my list of top 10 comic book movies, Watchmen's there. And it's probably my favorite Zack Snyder film. So when I had heard he was going to be doing Superman in 2013?
Yeah, because he had another movie that disappointed me in between.
Yeah, Sucker Punch, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I had high hopes for, but yeah, we all know how that ended. But oh. Watchmen, I actually really enjoyed Watchmen. I'm a fan of it, and it's on this list because I bought the director's cut of the Watchmen.
Black Freighter in?
Yes, I believe so. I haven't actually watched it yet. I own the original cut, and that's what I watched. But the director's cut I picked up, it's been a few years, actually, since I picked that up. And it's been sitting on my shelf, and I've decided to rewatch it. I haven't rewatched it yet, but I will be. But as far as the graphic novel goes, I just never got around to it. So I actually have it. And I'm going to be reading for the first time it shortly, and like probably this week. But for the TV series, like the new one that came out, we're three episodes in and I'm loving it. I really, really like the show. Like it's awesome. I can't say enough good things about it. I love every scene that Jeremy Irons is in is amazing. I could watch a whole episode with just him in those scenes. And I don't want to say too much because, like, have you seen it at all, Kev?
No, but between, you know, different comic things that I follow and listen to and everything, I know what's up, but I haven't had the things hit me.
Okay.
I don't know. You said you're three episodes in?
I am. Well, there's only three episodes out so far.
Right.
So I'm caught right up.
When episode one aired, the number one trend in the world was people discovering, oh, this isn't a story. This thing actually happened in the U.S.
Like in what way?
The Wall Street thing.
Oh, Black Wall Street. Yeah. I didn't know.
People didn't know that was a real thing.
I didn't know.
I had only heard like a month earlier, unrelated thing I was listening to was talking about like, oh, hey, here's stuff you never knew about in history. And that just have, it was like some top 10 mental floss list or something like that. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
It was nothing. So I knew something about it, but just a grain of sand about it. Like I knew nothing overall.
So yeah, like for our listeners, if you don't know what we're talking about, this was a real historical event that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Google it, Black Wall Street. It's scary. And
it's fascinating. It's scary. And there's so many people that say between this happening and the burial of it happening to the point where people don't know about it, is why there's such a difference in equality, mm-hmm. financially, you know, everything that continues to today. Like, you can trace it back to this.
Yeah.
You can trace it back further, but, you know.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And actually, Damon Lindelof, who is one of the creators of the Watchmen TV series, he's also, he did The Leftovers, and he also did Lost. He also did the first two J.J. Abrams Star Trek films. He said, like, he didn't know about this either, this Black Wall Street thing. So when he learned about it, because I think he was reading a book or something, and they talked about it, and he had no idea what they were talking about. So he did his own research. And then he said, like, I want to include this on something I do. And then he included it in the first episode of Watchmen. And we don't know yet, but given the clues that we're given, this leads into an origin story for one of the heroes of this world.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to that of Superman. You know how Superman's parents put him in a rocket and sent him off? Like these two parents put their young son into a back of a horse carriage that was getting out of Tulsa during this racial uprising, this racial, you know, war that was going on. And, you know, the people that were taking this child out, like the carriage ended up crashing because the people got shot and killed and the horses turned over and blah, blah, blah. It's a very similar origin to Superman. Like it's amazing how they did that. And then like this world, you know, it's an alternate version of Earth, you know, where Richard Nixon was president for like 20 years or something, and then Robert Redford's been president for like 30 years or something at this point. And just little things like that. But one thing I should clarify, for people who don't know, because I didn't know this going into this TV series, I assumed this was a sequel to the movie, and no. It's not. It's nope. This is tied directly into the graphic novel. And one
without Alan Moore, and you know, yeah.
Well, Dave Gibbons is a consultant on it, so one half of the original team is working on the show. Alan Moore refuses to acknowledge anything of his that gets adapted. And there's a big story behind that about how Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons basically DC screwed them when they did this Watchmen graphic novel. Like they completely screwed them over big time. Which, I mean, if you look at Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, you know, the co-creators of Superman, they did the same thing to them. You know, so DC is notorious. Yeah, DC is notorious. Yeah, Bill Finger, yes. DC is notorious for screwing over their creative people. So yeah, that's why Alan Moore wants like nothing to do with anything that gets adapted of his, especially the DC material. But it's one of the things that I didn't realize why the film is so divisive, and I didn't know this because I haven't read the graphic novel, is, you know, they called them, using air quotes, superheroes, but nobody actually has any powers except for Dr. Manhattan. Dr. Manhattan's the only real superhero in that universe. Everyone else is just normal people dressing up as heroes and fighting crime with masks. Very similar to Kick-Ass, essentially. You know, even like Ozymandias, for example, like, he's just really smart. Like I know in the graphic novel, there's one scene where he catches a bullet, and it's not because he has superpowers, it's just because he's so smart that when the bullet's shot at him, he can calculate exactly how to catch it and without, you know, basically hurting himself. I think he does, it does cut him, but he manages to catch it, right? And it's just because he's really smart, you know. And, you know, Silk Spectre, she, you know, she's a great martial artist. Night Owl has, you know, tech. Rorschach is just a crazy guy in a mask. The Comedian is just a super strong jock, essentially. But in the movie, they have powers. Like, you see the Comedian punch through, like, concrete. You see, Silk Spectre.
It's the little things, but...
Yeah.
It's little things that don't seem super compared to, you know, Dr. Manhattan or...
Yeah.
Or other superhero movies that people would have been aware of at the time. But when you take it as its own in the graphic novel, you say, okay, wait, but people can't actually do this. But I mean, between martial arts movies or The Matrix, or just, you know, there's so many things that we just, as an audience, have been conditioned for. Well, no, someone's in a suit, so they can do this. But no, your average person can't do that.
Yeah. So...
Even the Punisher movies, which he's a human, do that too.
Yeah. But yeah, so I didn't realize that was some of the criticisms about the movie, was the fact that Zack Snyder gave them powers, essentially. But in the graphic novel, they didn't have powers. They were just regular people dressed up, right? So in the TV series, because it's a continuation of the graphic novel, like, there's nobody with powers except for Dr. Manhattan, whom we haven't really seen yet.
No, he's referenced, but...
Well, you do see him in footage, like, because they have a satellite orbiting Mars, and you can see him on Mars. But other than that, like, you haven't seen him on Earth or interacting with any of the characters yet. I know that is coming because they have shown like a preview for the whole season, and you do see Dr. Manhattan walking. I'm assuming it's in Tulsa, in a suit. So, but anyway, you know, I'm for my pop culture rewind. I'm going back and rewatching the director's cut of the 2009 film. I am reading the graphic novel, and I must say I'm enjoying this HBO series. It's awesome. I can't say enough good things. I really wish it was one of those bingeable ones, because I would have watched the whole season already, guaranteed.
I have heard that a lot, and his name keeps coming up tonight. Kevin Smith has a podcast called Fat Man Beyond.
Okay.
And his co-host Mark Bernardin is a TV show writer. He's a comic writer. He used to do editor and journalism for any magazine you can think of. So he was discussing Watchmen recently, and he as a black man has a different perspective than you or I would, and rightfully so there. And he's very brilliant with boiling down the essence of a story. What is this story about? What is the point that this story is trying to make about society at large or life at large? And he said, the Watchmen comic was, and it's in there, who watches the Watchmen?
Yep.
Who oversees the people that are above us? Okay, fair. And it's in there. It's in the movie, too. He said the HBO show boils down to who decides that I'm safe in a world where I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have to wear a mask. Where even police have to wear a mask. Where I am strong and I still need a weapon also. Who decides that I'm safe and how can I control my own safety for me or for my family? Mm-hmm. And especially in this world created for the show. And I was floored by that. But as someone that's seen the first three and the way you've talked about that, I'm thinking that overall idea is correct there.
Mm-hmm. And I got to say, each episode gets better and better. Like this last episode, I'm rewatching it a third time. It's that good. The casting is bang on. Like Jean Smart plays Silk Spectre, but now she's an FBI agent. And she's so good. And this was like, in the third episode was her first episode that she's been in. And I keep thinking to myself, like, she's like my new favorite character. Like, she's so amazing. And like I said, every Jeremy Irons scene, like, is amazing. Like, it's so good. Yeah, I don't want to get...
I just saw the... And you haven't read the graphic novel yet, which I'll be curious about, too.
Yeah.
But I never saw the Watchmen as archetype... And I know it's funny to say that, but it's archetype that you could do something like this with. And it's funny to say it because they are archetypes, because these were the Charlton heroes that DC bought, and Alan Moore is going to play with them. And they said, no, you can't play with them because we're going to do stuff. So he created brand new characters based on the Charlton characters.
Yeah.
So they're already based on something. But, like, you know, people can reinterpret Batman or Joker or Superman or Spider-Man every couple of years. I never saw it happening with the Watchmen of, hey, here's my version of the Watchmen story.
Yeah.
Even the Snyder movie was just like, well, yeah, there's going to be a movie. It's based on the book. And that's one and done. And that's all that will ever be of it.
Yeah.
But we all said at the time, you can't do Watchmen as a 2-hour movie. You could do it as a 12-hour or 12-episode HBO show, and each episode would be one issue of the comic. Well, didn't they take that somewhere else with this series now?
Yeah.
Now, the graphic novel that you have, is it just a straight-up graphic novel or one of the annotated ones?
Like, with all the extra material, like the short stories and stuff?
No, they've done annotated... It's probably more of an oversized hardcover, if I got to remember.
Okay.
But it's notes on the side of, hey, and this panel is this, and it's referencing back to this.
No.
Okay. Yeah, because people, you know, it's Watchmen, so people have studied it over for years, and anytime I've read it, I've found new things. And it could be as simple as, hey, this panel grid is the same as a panel grid that happened previously, which means this scene is echoing that scene, and I didn't realize it at the time.
Okay.
Or because it's Alan Moore, it's, hey, I don't get this reference, but when you get the reference, it adds a little something more to it. I mean, you're going to enjoy it just straight up as it is.
Mm-hmm.
But once you read it, if it's something that you decide you want to reread, you know, every couple of years, it's worth it to know more.
No, that's awesome. Yeah,
and add more to it.
I'll definitely check that out. Like the one I have is the version they released just before the movie, because I remember I just looked at the back, and because I watched a video recently with Damon Lindelof. I can't remember the name of the video, but basically it's him going to a comic book store and he's doing an interview while he's buying comic books. And anyway. He said one of the greatest moments of his life, because he said Watchmen is his favorite graphic novel of all time, was when they did the re-release just before the movie. They put new like quotes on the back cover, and he's one of them. And I have that version, where it's got the Damon Lindelof.
Oh, that version's long gone too.
Yeah, no, it's over 10 years old now. But one thing,
because any reprint now would not have the movie mentioned at all.
No. Well, one thing I want to also mention, tying into Watchmen, is the Doomsday Clock miniseries that's going on at DC right now.
And that has been for the last 2 years. Yeah, it's a 12-issue series.
But, I know the reason for the delay is because artist Gary Frank takes so long to do an issue.
Not if you talk to him one-on-one at a convention. He says different things.
Yeah, that's one of the stories anyway. But anyway, for whatever reason, I mean, if that were the case, it's worth it. Because Gary Frank art is amazing, and it so fits in with this story. Like, I love seeing, Superman coming face-to-face with Dr. Manhattan. I like that the DC characters are interacting with these characters. I love that. We had a scene between Lex Luthor and Ozymandias, the smartest man of the DC universe versus the smartest man of the Watchmen universe. I gotta say, Doomsday Clock is an excellent miniseries. Go ahead.
Sorry. I like the Dr. Manhattan explanation for the different eras of DC.
Yes. That was
cool. I saw you come to Earth and I tried to do this, and this, the version of you that was happening, the version of everyone that you inspired, stopped, and now we have this version because I meddled. And it's like, I apologize, and I kind of reset time, but that gives us the Golden Age, Silver Age, Crisis, Post-Crisis, Zero Hour, Rebirth, 52. It puts everything into a context of it all happened. It all mattered, and this outside God fiddled with it.
Yep.
I was trying to think of the movie editing software, but he was in like Final Cut Pro or something, and he decided to rewind and go back and mess with it. Great explanation, and it opens up possibilities of, we can tell these stories. We can tell stories at any time in our history, and it'll still matter, and it still falls into that context because we have this outside explanation for it. I'm like, all right, good, go. I accept this. With your constant reboots and rearranges, DC, I accept this answer.
Yeah, I like it. And yeah, who better than Geoff Johns to write it and Gary Frank doing the art? The only better artist that I could think of would be Jim Lee. But
he couldn't do it though. That's too much. When's the last time he's done like 12 issues in a row of something?
Well, the thing is, it would take two or three years for him to do it. Definitely. Yeah. But anyway, before we wrap up this topic, do you have any honorable mentions of things that you will be checking out that you want to throw out there?
So this is going to be, there's a scheduling right now for me on a different podcast for that I write for.
Okay.
I write for their site, Retro Network, and I'm on their podcast sometimes. But myself and one of the other people on there have both been rewatching wrestling pay-per-views that took place on Thanksgiving. Not that weekend, not around that time, but actually on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And these companies were sure that whole families would shell out $30 of pay-per-view money and sit the whole family down to watch wrestling Thanksgiving night.
Yeah.
Turkey and American Thanksgiving. So in November with your turkey and stuff and everything. So I've been watching a couple just because it's interesting, because you have tens of thousands of fans in attendance too on Thanksgiving. And it's just kind of the whole set is kind of bizarre. I can't picture it. But as I'm watching it, I think, I know I watched one of these, and I think it was at my grandparents' house. There's no way they ordered pay-per-view, so I'm trying to figure out how I watched it. But also, I watched so much of this as a kid, and it's interesting to watch as an adult, because now I'm seeing the wrestlers are grown men, they're adults as well, mm-hmm. but they have to simultaneously wrestle, protect themselves, protect the person they're wrestling against, tell the story, be in physical shape, and also appeal to the children of that 1980s era. And I'm really like looking at them as, this is someone's job. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of like taking myself out of, you know, the TV performance of it and just looking at them as like actual people, what they're doing for the night. And I'm seeing all of it in a whole new light that time and distance has given me. But Roddy Piper, for example, who everyone knew, mm-hmm. is just, you can see the role he's playing. How he has to be a ring general. You can see how he's setting up, like, okay, we need to do A, B, and C in this match, so I need to make sure that everything progresses from there to there, and this person's out of touch, so I need to do that, but this kid's cheering me, so I do an extra move for him. And like, I'm seeing the creativity and the artistry of it, and also the it's a job.
Yep.
But that's been loads of fun this week. And I gotta get a hold of someone in my family to find out how on earth we watch wrestling on Thanksgiving. I know my grandparents were not having it. Awesome. Might be some Mandela effect memory.
Maybe, or maybe, and you're sure it's Thanksgiving that you watched it? Or was it maybe you watched it after the fact?
That's what I was wondering too. I thought, because we had the little like tape borrowing wrestling thing in grade school.
Yep.
And we would rent them all the time too. So what I've been able to uncover, and this is the possibility, is the two main promotions, WWF and NWA WCW, mm-hmm. would frequently, there's a couple times in history where they scheduled an event on the same night, both on pay-per-view, and one would blink and give it away for free.
Hmm.
So I'm thinking it was one of those.
Cool.
That someone gave away for free and put it on either the cable network, or I still remember, if you remember pay-per-view, every so often something would come in free, mm-hmm. or the scramble wouldn't be good enough that you could actually make out what was going on.
Yeah.
We were going to, there was wrestling on one night, and I was flipping through. I thought, all right, I want to know what's going on. Maybe it's clear enough that I can know what's going on. I want to know who won. And I think like my mom got up and left the room to do like dishes or take a phone call or something like that. So I switch and it's coming in for free. Perfect. Crystal clear. I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Well, my mom wanted to finish watching what she was watching, so she made me turn back. I turn again for the replay and it's still on for free. So I popped a blank VHS and recorded the rest of the night. Turns out it came in for free because both wrestling companies had stuff the same night, and WWF said, well, forget you, and gave it away for free to everyone.
Hmm.
Just to make a point, who's going to spend $30 on a pay-per-view when we're giving ours for free?
Exactly. And I mean, back then, that was a lot of money.
It was a ton of money. Their pay-per-view money was millions upon millions. So to just blink and say, we'll give it away for free, but then now you want the next one that you will pay for. So yeah, I'm thinking Thanksgiving was one of those where we were flipping through. It turned out they were given away for free that night because of the competition. It's my best guess.
Awesome.
Yeah, so yeah, in theory, I'm doing a podcast later this month all about that.
Cool. All right, well, for me, for my honorable mentions, I have the 1990 Dick Tracy film.
I have been meaning to rewatch that lately. Everyone's rediscovering it.
Yeah, I've always loved that movie, but I recently bought it on Blu-ray a few years ago. Like, one of those times when walking through Walmart or whatever, and it's in the $5 bin, I was like, hell yeah, I'll pick that up. And I just haven't got around to watching it, but it's on my shelf. Okay. I mean, I'm going to rewatch it. I mean, I've watched it a million times, but The Flintstones, the 1960s original TV series. I recently bought the first six seasons of the 60s show on DVD. It was like, I don't know, $50 or something. So I picked that up. So I want to get around to rewatching that as well. And also last year I bought the entire series of MASH on DVD.
Ooh, that's a big set.
Oh yeah, it is. It's 10 seasons. I can't remember how many discs. I think I made it to season 3 or 4. And then I've been kind of jumping seasons because, you know, as you know, like, you know, the cast changed, you know, throughout. So I wanted to watch certain episodes, and certain, you know, dynamics, like, you know, seeing Charles and Colonel Potter, and then go back and watch Frank and Colonel Blake and that sort of thing. But, yeah, they were selling it at Costco around Christmas time last year. And I got the whole series. I want to say it was only like $40 or something. It was so cheap.
That's dirt cheap for how much is in there.
Yeah, so I got that, and I've been meaning to get back to rewatching classic episodes, so I am going to be doing that. All right, well, I think this is going to be a franchise topic. We will definitely get back to Pop Culture Rewind at a future episode. But before we get to our Ender segment, we're going to play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me across all platforms, and my blog are all masked ephemera, going through all the discarded, thrown away stuff that everyone likes to revisit, kind of like what we did tonight.
Excellent. And I apologize, dear listener. I am over my cold, but I do have allergies. Like our last two episodes that we did, like the ones I did with Rich and Jeff, by the end of our second episode, I was just about not able to speak because my cold was so bad.
I'll say, as a listener, you sound much better than you did on those ones.
Oh, thank you. I think like now it's just allergies getting me, but yeah, my cold has went away successfully. But anyway, I just want to thank you for taking the time to download and or listen to this podcast. We appreciate any feedback you can give us. So please leave a review at Apple Podcasts or at podbean.com. We'd also like to hear from you. You can contact me, Chris, I'm the producer of this podcast, by email at chrislock1701@yahoo.ca. That's chrislock1701@yahoo.ca. Or you can contact me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at chrislock1701. Be sure to check out the group on Facebook, the Pop Culture Pub. It's what this podcast is based on. And we're getting new members all the time. So feel free to check that out and join. And be sure to check out the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk. It's a group that I am an admin on Facebook. All right, well, without further ado, let's move into our Enders segment. So for this week on Enders, I got a few items, and Kevin, if you have a few, feel free to chime in. First up, Disney Plus is launching November 12th, so at the time of this recording, it'll be Tuesday. Kevin, do you think you're going to be investing in Disney Plus, or are you going to wait a little bit? Or
I know we are. I don't know how we're going to. Don't know if it's going to be day one right now. I have a certain life change happening the next week. Don't know if you saw online or not, because we're friends on different things. But I'm starting a new job on the 18th.
Oh, okay. Congratulations.
So, yeah. So I'm, you know, and we're figuring stuff out, but mm-hmm. I'm assuming we're going to do it. I think we're waiting to see what the bundle, because we have Hulu already. Mm-hmm. So I think we're waiting to see what the bundle is, because all the Disney Plus, like, pre-order stuff, where they'll say, you know, if you subscribe right now, we'll save you X amount of money. All of it has said that if you have Hulu as well, this does not count as a bundle deal. But most of the bundle deals seem like they'll be a little bit cheaper if that's what it is. So I think on launch we'll see what the deal is and figure it out then.
Yeah, I wish I knew more details. Like, I totally intend to get this this app, but at this point, I don't even know, like, how a guy pays for it. Like, is it a credit card thing, or can you do PayPal? You know, are they going to have, like, Netflix cards like they do? I really don't know. But, I mean, the lineup is amazing. Like, all the Marvel stuff we know that's coming.
They announced officially today Endgame's on at day one. Mandalorian looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks so awesome. I'm so psyched. Then,
speaking of the incredible fans of the Incredible Hulk, the short-lived 90s Hulk cartoon is going to be on there in full.
Mm-hmm. That
was on UPN in the States, so no one saw it.
Yep. And there's, like, so much content. Like we were talking at work the other day, like Darkwing Duck, you know, Tailspin, DuckTales, all that kind of stuff is going to be on there.
I've never seen Black Hole.
You've never seen Black Hole?
I've never seen Black Hole.
Wow. That is one of my favorite sci-fi movies of all time.
See, that's going to be on there.
It's a little dated. I mean, but I remember being a kid watching it on The Wonderful World of Disney.
Listen, the most dated sci-fi, to tangent for a second, the most dated sci-fi thing I ever saw was The Andromeda Strain. Because I read the movie, or I read the book and mm-hmm. loved it, and I watched the movie, and that was the most low-budget, dated thing I ever saw.
Yeah.
So as long as it's better than that, I'm okay.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, for me, I love the Black Hole. Some of the robots are definitely dated. It's a lot of nostalgia when I watch it. But for a new viewer, I don't know what you'll. I'm interested to hear your thoughts, like when you watch it, because for me, it's one of my favorite shows of all time. I'm actually got like the entire trading card set. I picked this up at a convention. I'm holding it right now of the Black Hole, 88 pictures, and literally the whole movie. You can watch the whole movie by looking at these trading cards, because like every scene is represented. But yeah, it's, what's that actor's name? He just died, a couple weeks ago. He was on Jackie Brown. He was on, the new season of Twin Peaks they just did. He was just on El Camino.
I know who you're talking about, but I'm not going to get his name in a million years.
Yes, he's on that film. He's the captain of the ship. And Roddy McDowall does the voice of the main robot. It's classic. I love it. Every time it would come on The Wonderful World of Disney, I always watched it. That and Condor Man. Have you ever seen Condor Man?
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know that I ever saw it in full. I can picture it. I know I've seen it. I mean, it's been over 30 years.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to be on there, but I mean, that's also a Disney movie from that era. I'm definitely looking forward to Disney Plus. And yeah, Mandalorian. I'm so excited for that. All right. Well, moving on. I just want to throw this out there. Rudy from the original season of Survivor. He's the, you know, the ex Navy SEAL. He was the older gentleman of the group he almost won it. Unfortunately, he recently passed away at the age of 91. I think most people watched that first season of Survivor. I know I did.
Oh, it's huge. It was a phenomenon, the first season.
Oh, yeah, it definitely was. And I mean, he was the one that I was rooting for. And it was so sad that, you know, he almost made it, but didn't quite make it.
But he had, because we didn't know Survivor was, we didn't know what it would be. Yeah. And I mean, even now, like, my mom watches it every season now.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if I'm there, I've seen, you know, here and there. But they change the rules every season because people will study it and study the, because it's not just about living out there. Mm-hmm. It's about manipulating other people.
Which
and people study that. And that's why they change it up there too, because some people learn how to play the game and they need to throw a new kink into it.
Well, and that's the thing, like that first season, like, yeah, no one had seen anything like it before. And then you had, you know, that Richard Hatch, who ultimately won it.
He should not have won, based on every TV rule that we thought we knew beforehand. Mm-hmm. He should not have won.
Yep.
But he knew how to play and manipulate.
What, and then after that, everyone was doing it, right? Like, you know, he was forming his alliances. Oh, yeah. and you know, saying one thing to this person but doing another thing. And then now that's become standard. Like, that's standard that, you know, you form an alliance, you manipulate people. I mean, so much so that, I mean, it's translated to other shows. Like, I mean, Big Brother, that's what they do. You know, and it's all based on Survivor. I mean,
that's all Big Brother is. At least Survivor has the adventure of the island, or wherever they are. But the first season, also, and Rudy especially, was such a cross-section and a varied, diverse group of people, legitimately, mm-hmm. not casting just random group of people. It could be like 15 people waiting for an airplane. There's no reason they should all be there together. They don't come from the same place, nothing. They just happened to all be here. And it made it even more interesting. He was getting along and respecting, have conversations and interactions with people he never, ever would have at his age, mm-hmm. at his environment, at anything otherwise. And he gave every one of them the time of day.
Yep.
Like, he was respectable the whole time. He held his head, high the whole time. He had nothing to regret at the end, and people loved him for it, which is why if other people have passed from these game shows, no one knew. Because of what he earned, oh my God, what, almost 20 years ago now?
Mm-hmm. It
was news that he died because of what he earned in that short amount of time.
Actually, I want to say it is 20 years ago. I think it was the summer of 99. The first Survivor. I'm almost positive. But yeah, you know, very, very sad. But I mean, he was 91 years old.
He was 91, had a hell of a life. Mm-hmm. I believe his Alzheimer's at the end, which is awful.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Moving on, the next one I have here is, if you go to the Pop Culture Pub group wall, I shared a rant from Freddie Prinze Jr. about him talking about Star Wars. He was one of the voices on Star Wars Rebels. What the heck's his character's name? He was like the main character. He was like the Jedi Master who taught the younger Jedi. But anyway, he has a really good rant about Star Wars. And I don't want to spoil it, but go to the Pop Culture Pub group on Facebook and then just search down, and I shared it. It's a good rant from Freddie Prinze Jr. And then also another little tidbit of news that I, you know, made me feel good to see this. Gary Sinise, the Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump, apparently took over 1,000 children of fallen soldiers to Disneyland, and he paid for the whole thing. Apparently, this is something he does. He has a charity, and yeah, he's I know he's done a lot in a lot of charity work for veterans and so on and so forth. But you know, unfortunately, you know, people tend to forget. You know, a lot of these soldiers have children. But he didn't forget, and he's taken, I think the last count was like 1,700 and some children to Disneyland. And, you know, basically, you know, gave them a week in Disneyland, let them have fun and be kids for a week and forget, you know, the tragedy that they unfortunately had to live through. And I just think it's such an amazing thing for an actor, for anybody to do. And, you know, with, you know, his celebrity status, he's able to afford to do that. And I'm just, you know, it's such a testament to what a great human being he is that he's able to do that for people.
And it didn't seem like, from the story I read, it didn't seem like this story was out because they wanted, you know, because he asked for a camera crew to be there or something like that. Mm-hmm. He just does it. And this charity just does it. They don't do it to be recognized. They don't do it to, you know, to get, you know, high fives and applause and, you know, more money and roles and publicity. And all. They just do it because they feel it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he's definitely, yeah, he definitely didn't advertise this because, like, you, there's no way you take 1,700 children to Disneyland and, you know, like, he
covertly.
Covertly, yeah. Like, I mean, he, you know, definitely wasn't looking for publicity. I'm sure one of the parents of these children probably said, like, hey, you know, he's doing this. Like, why aren't you guys covering this? You know, and unfortunately, just the nature of news is, you know, to cover bad things, you know, to cover the shootings and, you know, this person got stabbed or that person, you know, hit and run or whatever. It, you know, like, news, unfortunately, is very negative. So it's so, you know, nice to see news like this that, you know, you got this guy who does this for children. And I'm a huge Forrest Gump fan. You know, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And Gary Sinise is definitely, you know, one of the highlights of that film. So, yeah, big fan. And he does have a little bit in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. If you go back to the Winter Soldier, when they're in the Captain America wing of the memorial, or the, is it the Smithsonian, or it's yeah. whatever museum they're at, he's the one doing the voiceover for explaining Captain America. I'd love to see Gary Sinise in a Marvel movie, but he, you know, as a character. But he indirectly was in Captain America Winter Soldier. But anyway, Kevin, do you have anything to add before we call it an episode?
I have one thing.
Okay.
To just go off of you for a second. I'm now picturing two things for Gary Sinise and Marvel. I'm like fantasy writing here.
Mm-hmm.
Either in that world, there was a Captain America movie and he played Captain America in it, which is why he would be doing the voiceover mm-hmm. in the Smithsonian of that world, or I'm picturing like the Marvel Handbook to the Universe that they released in the 80s when they showed the other Captain Americas, like they were implying that other people stepped in instead yep. of Steve Rogers while he was frozen, like
yep.
Gary Sinise was one of those guys, so he was like an other Captain America in this world.
That would be awesome.
Steve Rogers was back, they didn't need him anymore.
That would be awesome. But I got something even better. Okay, and this is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
Imagine Gary Sinise as Nick Fury. Like the white eye patch original
Nick Fury. Not David Hasselhoff.
Not David Hasselhoff. But, you know, like if, like I know, like in the, you know, the whole Sam Jackson being Nick Fury thing came from the Ultimate Universe. You know, like, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Sam Jackson. I think he's an amazing Nick Fury, but just imagine if anyone else could play Nick Fury, wouldn't Gary Sinise have been amazing in that role?
He could do it. Can I already picture it? See, I thought you were going Captain America, you know, you're sticking with just Captain America route. And I was picturing you saying, Nomad or Rick Jones.
Rick Jones would be good.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Rick Jones.
He needs to be younger, though.
Yeah, a little bit younger. Like, I'm thinking.
He has at least be younger than Banner.
Yeah. Like, I would. Like, I know he plays Deadpool, but Ryan Reynolds, I think, would be great Rick Jones. But. No, just Gary Sinise is, if anyone else were to play Nick Fury, I would want it to be Gary Sinise. I think he would just be absolutely amazing in that role.
No, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be like at work tomorrow or in the middle of the night or something and think of a different character he could play. Just sit straight up going, wait a minute.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, like, yeah, they definitely could cast him into anything. But yeah, no, him playing one of the other Captain Americas, that would be awesome. I can't remember their names offhand, but.
No, but I'm picturing my, like, handbook of it, and it was from Steve Rogers, Bucky was in there, Nomad was in there,
yeah.
A couple people I don't remember, and then it ended with, U.S. Agent,
yes.
John Walker.
Yeah.
And I can picture the image, and it's probably Mark Greenwald era, but I can't mm-hmm. remember the people in between right now.
Yeah, me either. But, no, yeah, that'd be, and yeah, that would make sense tying in with Captain America, him being the narrator. Because, I mean, when you watch that movie, you just assume, well, it's just Gary Sinise in this world doing the narration, because Gary Sinise does voice work.
He does stuff like that, yeah. But why not make him something else yes. in that world, too?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a reason for it. And who knows, maybe he could play a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent at some point in one of the future movies. You know, maybe. I don't know. I always kind of hope Nick Fury was kind of like, you know, like a code word, you know, kind of like, you know, how some people think James Bond is,
yeah,
you know, just a code word. That's not actually the real person's name. And there's different people that could be James Bond over the years.
And honestly, like even the comics could have done that if it wasn't for all the life model decoys over the years. You yeah. just roll your eyes. Now you're like, all right, you were going with that answer again, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But, all right, well, I guess we can call this an episode.